Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
There will be time to talk more about Dark Souls 3, but that is not this day. It is time for IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis,
Scoop.
Jared Petty,
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne.
Three scoops.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk a little bit more about that Tetris movie. We're going to talk...
That sounds suspicious.
We're going to talk about a feature that is sorely lacking from today's consoles. But first, E3.
I've heard of it.
The Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Yeah. You wanted to call it the Electronic Gaming Expo.
I did. And I was like,
EG.
And don't call it the E3 Expo.
No, don't call it that, because that's redundant.
Like, that's like an ATM machine.
That's a problem for the Department of Redundancy. Department of Redundancy Department.
E3 is on the horizon, ever approaching. Every day it gets a little bit closer.
We're like so hyped.
3 weeks away.
It's like for people that don't work in this business, it's just hype. For people that have jobs like ours, it's half hype, half dread.
Yeah, hype and spreadsheets in about equal proportion.
Yeah,
a lot of spreadsheets. We're good at spreadsheets.
It's amazing how important spreadsheets are to E3.
I'm good at 2D shooters and spreadsheets.
So if you combine those,
not good at Dark Souls.
Well, if you combine them, you get that weird shooter that was built into the Excel 90. Was it 95?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about, but that sounds boring.
There's a video game hidden in Excel.
Oh, yeah. I've read about that. I've never played it, though.
Anyway, I think it's time to take stock in all the games we know of coming to E3.
All of them?
This year. All of them.
Is this a list that perhaps I worked on?
It is a list that perhaps you worked on.
Perhaps I worked on it a bit as well.
Yeah. This is going to be an 11-hour long game.
No, it's not too bad.
Actually, according to IGN.com, a website I frequent, the list of confirmed games is actually not that long.
What is it, like 14 or 15?
It's like, I'm eyeballing about 30 games that are confirmed.
Here's the thing, we know games are going to be there because they're announced last E3, but the company won't confirm to us that they're going to be there. So we have a list of games that are probably going to be there, and then we have a list of games that are absolutely confirmed, and we get those daily. I mean, I get people they emailed me directly and say, can we get on this list? We know we're going to be there, but they're not making news about it.
Sometimes companies, it's really funny seeing how different publishers, some are so open and honest. We're showing off game ABC. It's going to be awesome. And then sometimes they're oddly cagey. Yeah. We're like, hey, EA, are you showing off Mirror's Edge? The game's out right then. And they're like, I don't know.
Well, people get afraid.
I don't know, maybe.
Well, like, there is a history of some games being at E3 and then skipping.
The Metroid Dread situation, where there was a game that was on the list of games that was going to be shown, and it never materialized. Like, as of a day before, that game was coming out, and then just nothing.
I
don't think that was ever real. I thought that was faked.
What, the Metroid Dread thing?
Yeah.
Well, Metroid Dread I've read, was that was real. Text, I think was that text in Metroid Prime 3.
Yeah. But also, I believe
it said something Metroid Dread.
As I've heard the story told,
so it's definitely in another game.
It was on a press release the day before, like a list of games that was going to be out during the conference.
I thought that was faked. I'm not sure.
It might be.
There's a hissing sound in the studio, so there may be a gas leak in here. If the four of us pass out on this video, please, someone on YouTube, let the authorities know that we are in need of assistance here in the IGN studio.
Sure. Surely not Sean in the studio or someone else watching this on the
It's just a light.
I'm not sure how this video would ever make its way
on light
YouTube.
Leaking gas.
That's not how it works. I thought
they're all locked.
I thought we shot the show in here and then it just got up on YouTube.
It just gets beamed to YouTube. We're all just, it's the ultimate blooper.
Yeah. Anyway, games confirmed to be at E3 2016 in alphabetical order, starting with Attack on Titan.
I forgot that video game was in the works.
I know. I'm a little surprised that it's not out already. Also, but I'm not sure what the if there's still a rabid fan base for that.
No, those Titans aren't going to attack themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, they might.
Battlefield 1.
Ah.
The next Battlefield.
Get hyped!
Really?
The second best trench digging game to come out in the last decade.
What was the first one?
Minecraft.
Oh. That's very good. Yeah. I like that. Astute observation.
Thank you.
Yeah. The Xbox.
Oh, go ahead. No. Excited about the airplanes. I want to fly an airplane. I like World War One aircraft.
They're biplanes. You know,
yeah, biplanes, triplanes. They're very distinctive.
Triplanes. Get out of here.
What, the Fokker DR1 triplane? That's what the Red Baron flew.
Definitely get out of here.
You gotta believe it.
Yeah, absolutely. But triplane's really cool. Sopwith Pup, another good triplane.
Are you a World War One
camel?
Yeah. Absolutely, I'm really excited about this game.
Are you a World War One?
That's the least surprising Jared Petty fact.
You want to talk about the Battle of Jutland? I am here for
you. A couple people in the office care deeply about World War One.
That's a
setting.
World War One's a very interesting time in history.
It's the rise of mechanized warfare.
Yeah. Sure. I hate that Kaiser so much.
Who Kaiser Sose?
All of them.
Oh, okay.
All the Kaisers. Square Enix is bringing something called Black the Fall, a PC game.
What is that?
You're gonna have to. You can click through on IGN.com to read more about a game called Black the Fall from Square Enix. Mm-hmm.
You would feel like, I mean, maybe I'm just exposing my own ignorance here, but you know, there's certain games that I play a lot of, and certain games that I'm not as familiar with. Very rare is there a game that I have just never heard. Yeah. I've never.
What about
never
Aero
even
Blasters?
Heard of its existence? What?
Aero Blasters.
I know Aero Blasters.
You're gonna be hearing more about Aero Blasters soon. Yeah, that's right.
We got to what level did you get to? Four.
For you.
Yeah, that was a good job.
But I continue many times. Black the Fall is apparently an action game from the Square Enix Collective.
Yeah, it's something they're publishing that's being made by a not normally Square Enix studio, if I remember.
Yeah, they do their I don't want to call it Kickstarter, but they're more like democratized, like, hey, here are these eight games, you know, should we publish some of them? They have this whole sort of system in place for sort of elevating indies.
I believe that there's two games in the Collective coming out at the show at least this year.
Call of Duty Infinite Warfare will be at E3.
Looks cool, but yeah. I don't know about
that. Doesn't have mustard gas.
No.
Probably doesn't even have trenches.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Mustard gas.
Go on the record, probably no mustard gas.
Probably.
All right.
Maybe triplanes, though.
I'm hoping so. That'd be a space triplanes?
Yeah, space triplanes.
Oh, space triplane.
Civilization 6 was just unveiled. It will be at E3.
That's a cool deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a hard game. E3 is an interesting show because there's games that, you know, I just know, everyone knows up and down, end to end, it's going to be an excellent game, but it just doesn't demo at E3.
Well, it's such a, you can't just like jump into it and now you're playing it.
No, because you get, like, for two reasons. One, it's just loud as hell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Loud and hot. And two, you get, you know, maybe like a good 10, 12 minute, maybe 15 minute chunk of time with a game. And so it's like, what are you going to do in Civ 6 in that time?
Yeah,
I built a road. I founded Athens.
Exactly. I founded a town and off I went. My very first professional writing job was the Civ 5 guide for 1UP. And I think you got to play a Civ game for 50 hours before you really have any idea what's going on.
Yeah, if it's good or not.
Yeah.
You guys like that new art style?
I love
Some
it.
People are complaining about it.
The game's gorgeous. I read Dan Stapleton's very well-written preview that went over some of the changes that the game's making. I think they're super smart. Super hyped for that game.
It's got World War One in it.
Oh, it's World War One technology. World War II technology.
Future tech.
Future tech, indeed.
Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
Yep. Again?
Will be there.
Yeah. And then it's out shortly after. Yeah. It's out in August, right?
Yep. August.
I feel like not enough people... They're talking about that game. Like, Human Revolution was so good.
Well, they kind of went dark. I mean, they released some screenshots in December, and they did one trailer in April, and that's kind of been it.
Yeah.
I'm stoked for that game. I've seen some viral marketing, even around San Francisco.
Oh, really?
Posters on walls that say, like, what do they call, like, the augmented people in there? Like, no augments allowed, things like that.
Oh, weird. I haven't seen any of that. Maybe that's too subtle for me.
You don't really get out around the city too much, Justin.
What?
I don't think so.
I'm just
making an observation,
not
a judgment call. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Get some observations about you next time.
Please. Dishonored 2 will be at the show.
Rats with Bombs.
Bethesda has their own conference on Sunday.
One of the biggest sleeper hits of last generation, getting a bigger budget sequel. Just couldn't be more excited. Do we know, so the first Dishonored sort of surprised some people for not being open world. The environments were all big and gave you lots of opportunities to traverse in different directions.
But it was level-based.
Is the sequel the same? Have they talked about that? I guess I'm not sure. I didn't read, Lucy O'Brien wrote an excellent preview of that game on IGN, but it was like two pages and I was only able to kind of read the first page. So.
I feel like Dishonored's the kind of game I'd prefer to come in a level design. I feel like that game might work better with more tightly scripted, like local areas that you can do a lot of experimentation.
Carefully thought out.
Yeah, exactly.
Whale oil.
Whale oil indeed.
That game is awesome.
Whale?
Whale?
Whale.
Final Fantasy 15 will be at the show, also coming later this summer.
It's going to make Final Fantasy great again.
I mean, we hope so.
That game is impossibly gorgeous.
It's really, really pretty.
I love Final Fantasy.
Is it prettier than Uncharted 4, though?
No, goodness gracious,
so,
no.
It's possibly gorgeous.
Yeah, that would be a tough feat.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not technically, I don't think it's going to be technically gorgeous either on consoles. I think it's going to look
like
good.
That's like saying, look at that woman, she's gorgeous. And it's like, yeah, but she is gorgeous.
Okay, for the record, I did not say anything about objectifying women. I was talking about
whatever. Like, whatever you want to compare it to. Like, I'm like.
Don't double down, Justin.
Is she a supermodel gorgeous?
Speaking of gorgeous,
we had to focus on the four fabulous men and the road trip that are the center of this cast. Okay.
They are gorgeous men.
Those are some. Let me tell you, when those dudes wake up in the tent in the Dusuke demo, there is not a hair out of place. No one has ever looked better after sleeping outdoors than those guys.
The only point I'm trying to make is to compare a game to Uncharted 4 visually is just unfair to any game, and especially a game that's an open world game.
All right.
I think that Final Fantasy 12 is incredible, and it gives me a lot of 12 vibes. I'm very hyped for 15.
The next Forza will be at the show. I guess it's just called Forza. I'm not a big racing game guy myself. Something called Fury, F-U-R-I, will be at E3. A new Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator will be at the show.
Okay.
I liked the original Guilty Gear, but that was like 20 years ago.
There have been some good Guilty Gears. There was a Wii Guilty Gear game that was really good.
I'd say it's an underrated fighting franchise, I hear from Vince Ingenito.
So I'm told by Vince. Hitman will be at the show again, even though the episodes have started rolling out.
Yep. So we have two. I don't, how many more are planned? Does anybody know?
I'm not sure.
No one knows.
No. There's no way of knowing.
6 or 7, I think, if I remember correctly.
So was the second episode as big as the first in terms of a huge, giant environment for you to explore and a bunch of missions and objectives?
No, it's one big mission against one large environment with one kind of big mission that you can come at many different ways. Mm. That's Hitman's thing. Each new area...
Had like, 50 things you could do within it.
Yeah, well, there's 50 ways you can do the same thing. That'd be more accurate.
That's not true. You could follow different people around, and it had all these different little tick boxes for things you could do.
Well, you're following people, but ultimately you're killing the same person. People, you're just following different people to do it.
I mean, there really are levels each DLC. Path.
Yeah, this is it's a neat game. I don't like the rollout model at all. But like when this is all finished, I'll probably buy it because it's fun.
Hmm. Yeah, people have been enjoying the content. They would just like it to probably have it all at once.
Yeah.
I Am Setsuna. Square Enix is kind of rolling deep.
Yeah.
This E3, another Square Enix game, which is apparently I Am Setsuna is a Chrono Trigger in all but name only. So if you like Chrono Trigger.
I don't think it has time travel, though.
Good news.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just sort of a Chrono Trigger-esque JRPG.
The battle system is similar.
Now, let me ask you this, Sam and Jared. Just Cause 3 is on our list. Well, they worked on the wiki. I don't think you did.
No.
Yeah, we worked on the wiki.
Just Cause 3 is going to be at E3?
I didn't put Just Cause 3 on that list, so I don't know why it's on there, but if they say it's going to be there, that means in some press release somewhere, they sent us something.
This is a wiki, so maybe some Yahoo came in.
Yeah. Maybe someone from Yahoo.
We keep a pretty good
messing with us.
Pretty close eye on this one. I'm saying that now, it'll be vandalized by thousands. But we watch it pretty closely, and I think that's on there because somebody told us they'd be showing something with that.
Maybe there's some DLC.
Well, it is not uncommon for games that are already out to still have kiosks at E3 for various reasons, and so it could just be that.
Maybe just for fun.
Yeah. Just cause, one might say.
It's probably a mistake.
We know The Legend of Zelda for Wii U.
Yeah.
We'll be at the show. It's the only playable game Nintendo's bringing.
Yeah. Nintendo's doubling down
on it. Should have a huge presence.
So excited about the return of the blue tunic. Haven't had it back since the original Legend of Zelda with a blue ring. Really?
You have a blue tunic in Ocarina of Time.
Where do you have a blue tunic?
Yeah, you get to breathe underwater.
You're right. I have failed.
It's also in Majora's Mask.
I have failed him. Yeah, but that's not really the Zelda game.
Whoa!
Spitting hot fire.
In my ignorance.
I just hope the booth this year is like a big Zelda exhibit, like Disneyland for Zelda.
They also announced today that 500 fans in New York are also going to get to play.
That's
going to
be a bloodbath, is what that's going to be.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, it just bums me out. It's going to be hot. People are going to be camping for a few days to play Zelda.
Summer in New York.
And then they're just going to put it out as a demo a month later.
Yeah.
My hype level for that game is through the roof.
They're going to blow it out at E3.
We're going to find out what the subtitle is, if it has one.
I hope it's not The Legend of Zelda 1.
Yeah, I know. Hmm. We're finally gonna you know have a more thorough understanding of how big and open that world is, and how you know the puzzle solving and dungeons fit into that. I just think the thing that really gives me hope for that game is just the art. I think it's striking the perfect mixture of you know stylized and realistic. It's just it's so gorgeous and beautiful. I really, really am excited.
I agree with you. It's stunning. It's incredible to look at. I really do hope that given this big open world focus they keep talking about, maybe we'll go back to one of Sam's favorite themes and it'll be more like Zelda 1 where it is a true take it in whatever order you want game. That's thrilling. I'd like to see the franchise take a step in that direction again because it has been a long time. Zelda games, and I love them. I love almost all of them, have become increasingly linear experiences.
It's on a system powerful enough to have run Skyrim.
A Link
even
to the
Skyrim wasn't on it.
A Link to the what the hell is it called? The 3DS one. A Link Between Worlds.
Oh, Link Between Worlds.
A Link Between Worlds did that.
Gives you some openness, certainly more than A Link to the Past did. But it gives you some openness there. You've got some options at the way you take things. That's a very good point.
You could do like I think four of the dungeons in any order you want.
Yeah, that one and Seasons both give you some of those options. But I liked A Link Between Worlds, except it was fugly. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of open world games, Mafia 3.
Yep.
Will be at E3. Mm-hmm.
I think people kind of forget how massive that, like Mafia 2 was a huge deal and a massive hit and a great game, you know, and 3 seems like they're walking that fine line, like the mature story, you know, with the Vietnam vet and stuff can just come off in the wrong way, or if they treat it with the respect they should, it can come off just right. And so far, it definitely seems like they're making all the right calls.
Yeah, 60s-based Dixie Mafia crime story. I mean, that's everything I want in life, but will the video game be able to convey that story in an intelligent, engaging way? That's a very hard thing to do in the structure of a game. Stories are difficult to tell, in those, especially in a big open world setting. They pull it off. I can't think of anything I'd rather play.
Another game we've been waiting a long time to really have the curtain pulled back on what it actually is Mass Effect Andromeda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
No, well, I'm actually more disappointed than anything about Mass Effect because I wanted to play it this year, not see it at E3. I was hoping it'd be a fall game, but it got delayed.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just said on GameScoop before that I love their emphasis on the frontier and exploring the frontier and just pushing the limits of explorable space and being in a space video game and going somewhere that no human has ever been before, you know, in the fiction of that world is just the most exciting thing for me. And I really like that as an emphasis and focus of a Mass Effect game.
Yeah, that Ghost Riders trailer was so beautiful last year. It just absolutely grabbed you. It's like, oh, perfect pairing. But it didn't actually show us very much.
Yeah, I mean, I hope the game's good. I hope, you know, the characters are good and interesting. Yep. The writing's good. Like, all that is just a giant question mark. But the overarching theme, you know, really has me excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one for racing fans, Moto Racer 4 will be at E3. And what's this game, Neo?
Neo?
With your guy that looks like a ninja.
N-I-H-O.
N-I-O-H.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know anything about this at all.
What's interesting, the only thing I remember about that, I think...
I watched a demo of it that the UK team did.
Yeah.
It's like a horror-type game.
Well...
It's like third-person action.
The interesting thing about that is that game was announced... I think literally a decade ago. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost Last Guardian-esque, where that game was announced for a previous console generation and then just disappeared. And people are like, remember that weird game Neo? That got canceled. And then it's just back. Yep. Like, of all the things to bring back, like, that one came back around. And you can see the old, like, screenshots from, like, the mid-2000s. That's really funny. Bizarre.
Also, I fooled around with an early build of Motor Racer 4 not too long ago, and that was actually quite a bit of fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Arcade racer or simulator?
Arcade racer. It's a motocross arcade racer, a motorbike thing. And it was like a, hey, pick up and play Excitebike kind of thing. It was fun.
Much to the light of Andrew Goldfarb, Persona 5 will be at E3. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he and other Persona fans will finally get a release date for the West.
Yeah, that I'm looking forward to that too.
Are you looking forward to Sheeran the Wanderer, the Tower of Fortune, and the Dice of Fate?
Of all the games on this list, that's probably the one I'm most excited about.
Most anticipated game of E3 that we've mentioned so far for Jared is Sheeran the Wanderer, the Tower of Fortune, and the Dice of Fate.
Yeah, Sheeran games are all good. They're all 100 hours long and beautiful and easy to pick up and play and just endless entertainment. I haven't played a Sheeran game I didn't enjoy.
It's one of the original roguelikes?
It's one of the original console roguelikes. It's a roguelike, but it's very accessible. It strips away most of the layers of frustration and obduracy off of those and just kind of pares it down to, all right, look, you instantly understand what you're trying to do here. Now it's just a matter of can you pull it off? And you keep building and building and building toward that one perfect run to get to the end of the game. And unlike most roguelikes, it does allow you to kind of store things away between gameplay between play and play, and also to change the world. Like you change, or you never change, but the world does. The things you do cause the world to change, and then when you come back through, the evidence of your last passing causes something to alter and make the game different, and usually moving your
favor.
When
was the first one out? Was that PlayStation?
It was a Super Nintendo game. It was released only in Japan. The first year under release in the United States was for the DS.
Okay.
It was published by Sega during the CS. And that was a remake of the Super Famicom version.
Another one from Square Enix, Star Ocean Integrity and Faithlessness. Mm-hmm. We there. PS4, and that one's coming to PS3 as well. JRPG.
Exciting.
Siberia 3. Isn't Siberia a point-and-click adventure series?
Yeah.
It is.
I guess I didn't even. Did they kickstart Siberia 3? I want to say. I guess.
No, I don't know if they kickstarted it or not. It's being developed right now. I think.
I'd be thinking of Longest Journey.
I think.
I know
that's
they kickstarted
journey.
That.
Yeah, I don't know if they kickstarted Siberia 3, but it's deep in development. I think it's coming out this winter, and I got a very early look at that as well here in the office not too long ago. One of the guys working on that came over, and it's a point and click adventure game, and it looked pretty and interesting. And if you're looking for a LucasArtsy point and click adventure game, that's what they showed me.
Well, who's not?
Another one from Square Enix. I'm telling you, big show for these guys. The Turing Test, which I assume is another Square Enix collective.
It is a collective game, and I don't know anything about it.
Alan Turing.
Yeah.
Came up with the Turing Test.
Yeah, world hero.
He invented Benedict Cumberbatch.
He invented Benedict Cumberbatch. What was the name of that movie?
The Imitation Game?
Imitation Game.
Yeah, that was good.
I want to see that. Turing is amazing, man.
It's good.
Good movie.
Titanfall 2 will be at E3.
Mm-hmm.
Confirmed.
Some leaks about that today, yesterday, this week.
I missed this.
Am I wrong?
I don't know
this?
About this.
Is there going to be a single player mode?
I think there's some leaked info. That's what everyone is crossing their fingers for.
Well, but I thought they confirmed that. Am I crazy?
Well, they haven't unveiled it, right?
Oh, no, but
just
I thought they
a teaser video and
it'd be nuts for them not to do that. It's what everybody criticizes the game for.
That game played so good.
It's another Warhammer 40K game, Inquisitor, Martyr. I feel like there's just so
Warhammer
many.
40K : Inquisitor : Martyr. That's my favorite title on the list, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, it has two colons. Yeah. Wizards.
Yeah.
So that game.
but what about elves?
They have three.
The game we mentioned, Siberia 3, is from publisher Microids. Microids has another game called Yesterday Origins.
Yep, which is another adventure game. This one about immortals. So you're kind of jumping around between different time periods, playing these people that are alive in the Middle Ages and modern day. And
neat.
I got a neat little preview of it. It's, again, point-and-click adventure game. Very, very classical kind of obtuse puzzles. I like that kind of thing. Some people do, some people don't.
All right. A game I am very, very excited for is Yooka-Laylee. Coming to E3.
Yeah, it's neat.
The kickstarted new Banjo-Kazooie-like.
Well, have you heard the conspiracy theory?
Well, so this is what I wanted to bring this up. This is from the original team from Rare that worked on the original Banjo-Kazooie.
Is this the honeycomb thing?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, what are they doing?
You looked at me like I was a maniac in the office.
A total maniac.
No, that honeycomb thing is legit.
To people who aren't up to date, Yooka-Laylee is a new Banjo-Kazooie-like game from the team that made the original Banjo-Kazooie. It's supposed to be out this fall, and they've been releasing information and characters.
But
slowly.
Not a Rare, new developer. Yeah.
Yeah, it's from a new developer.
Platonic.
Yeah. But it is members of the original Rare team. And now they're teasing stuff on their Twitter. They tease stuff like form signed, legal documents annotated, and then they posted an image of the honeycomb from Banjo-Kazooie.
No, it was a honeycomb.
It's a hexagon. It's a
hexagon. Let me just point out, it's not even a honeycomb. It's a hexagon.
Okay.
But hexagons are, you're making me sound like I'm a conspiracy. when you see a hexagon like that, people's minds go to Banjo-Kazooie. So here's what either happened. Either Yooka-Laylee has some kind of Banjo-Kazooie tie-in, or those guys that play Tonic are assholes. Because they know what they're doing.
Richard Dreyfuss staring at a hexagon going, this means something.
But it does mean something.
It does.
They know what they're doing. So either we're in for some very good news, or they're really riling people up for nothing.
Well, maybe you stick Banjo in the Microsoft version of it. I mean, that makes
maybe
a lot of sense. The Xbox version has Banjo in it.
Because this game is supposed to come to all platforms, and Banjo-Kazooie, that property is owned by Microsoft now.
I've heard a couple of theories. Three things. I'll do them in order of least likely to most likely.
Okay.
Least likely, Yooka-Laylee is just becoming a Banjo-Kazooie game.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the least likely rumor. The next most likely rumor is that the Xbox version will
By the
have...
way, Marty Sliva came up with all of these rumors. These aren't rumors that people are talking Noted about anywhere else.
Super fan Marty Sliva.
Along with me, man. I love that stuff.
But I also like Honeycomb Cereal.
What, you don't like this?
I don't like Banjo. Oh, no, I'm great with them making this game. This
God,
is not my game.
Such a...
No, Jared? I'm so happy they're making this game, but it's not for me.
All right, what's the most likely scenario?
The next most likely scenario is that the Xbox version will have some, Banjo-Kazooie playable in it, or some sort of Banjo-Kazooie Easter egg. And then I think that maybe I did mess up the order of these, but the third rumor is that there's a Banjo-Kazooie world or stage. Okay. So it's like most of the game will still be ukulele, but then they'll go into some, Gruntilda Banjo-y.
And this is
world.
All because they put a hexagon for their avatar.
Yeah, but there's also all these other weird oblique hints and teases at the same time they changed their thing to a honeycomb.
No, this one thing is a puzzle piece. That would be completely unambiguous.
Because you want to have a good level of ambiguity.
I don't think of a honeycomb as being representative of any way
it's
of
Banjo-Kazooie,
except for the health bar.
They know what they're doing. You collect
but
them.
But they could have put a sneaker on.
Bears love like, honey.
Bears
wear
honeycomb
for
in that
health
game.
Now, I have a question about one of your theories, Justin. Like,
let's
talk about that middle one. Let's say
piece.
You do get Banjo in the Xbox version of this. Then this is cross-platform game. Do you get like Spawn in the PlayStation 4 one?
Yeah.
Or like, who do you put in there?
Spawn.
He's making a Soul Calibur reference.
Daxter?
Soul Calibur 2.
That works.
Had Link in the GameCube version.
And then two guys
Spawn in the Xbox version.
Yeah, no, Xbox fans got raised.
No. And I forget what it was in the second version.
Was that, who was the other?
Kratos?
It was Ryu. Ryu. Or was it Kreo or Ryu?
Kratos.
I don't remember who was in it. I only remember Spawn and Link.
I thought it was Ninja Gaiden Ryu was in one of them.
Oh, maybe. I think you're right. And then everyone bought the GameCube version because they just wanted to be Link. It's insane that that's a thing that actually happened.
Well, Link was a lot of fun to play as then.
I know, but it's just a bizarre, like, it just feels like a weird alternate reality where Link was in a Namco fighting game.
Yeah. Also, Necrid was there and everybody hated that across all versions.
The final confirmed game for E3 at this point is Zero Time Dilemma, something for Vita, 3DS, and PC.
Isn't that the 999 sequel?
I don't know.
I think so.
Wouldn't that be 10-10-10?
All right.
Anyway, here's a shorter list of games.
It should be 1,000, actually.
A shorter list of games likely to be at E3. Below, from Cappy, which I'm going to go ahead and just file that game under. Go ahead and finally put that game out already.
Yeah.
We've been waiting a long time for that
They've been waiting for you.
Okay. They're waiting for my go-ahead. Guys, you got the green light. You can go ahead and hit launch on Below. Crackdown 3.
Real excited about that.
From Microsoft.
Cannot wait to play that.
Big Destruction Simulator.
Yeah, and that's very, very likely because we know that beta is coming soon.
Yeah. So. Dreams from Sony. I think they unveiled this last year.
Should call that game Nightmares.
You create stuff with the Move controller?
I like Media Molecule.
That was the
a
one
lot.
Where they're animating all the claymation.
Yeah, but that looks kind of scary.
I don't know, man. Like, I try to keep an open mind, but it just looks so weird and nightmarish and just strange.
How about Nightmares into Dreams?
Yeah.
I'm just so exhausted by that point in a press conference where it's like, it can't be a game like that.
Yeah.
You gotta open with that. Like,
yeah.
EA should have FIFA 17. Square Enix should have, well, they could have Final Fantasy VII Remake. I don't know, they unveiled that last year. Mm-hmm. Gave a big update at PlayStation Experience in December, so I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be a good time to see that.
Gears of War 4 from Microsoft, that game has come out this fall. It's almost assuredly going to be at E3.
Ticking all the right boxes.
And Sony should have Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yay, cavemen and robots!
Cavewoman.
And dinosaurs.
Cave people and robots of indeterminate gender.
Ubisoft could very likely have Just Dance 2017. Sure, why not?
Did we talk about how we pushed the first game with dinosaurs back a little bit?
What do you mean?
From that old conversation we had about what was the first game with dinosaurs?
We figured out an earlier one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a Magnavox Odyssey game called Shooting Gallery. It was a shooting gallery type game, and you could put a gel on your TV for different things you were shooting, and it would be like it would go over your old CRT screen, and it would light up those things that you're shooting. And one of them was a dinosaur safari.
Hmm. Yeah, but if it's not actually in the software, in the code. I don't know that I count it.
Well, it lit up the area behind the dinosaur in the code, it knew it's like, here's the dinosaur.
Was it 72?
What, the Odyssey 72 or 73?
Yeah, it was really early.
So that would be one of the very first video games ever.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Anyway. Kingdom Hearts 3.
It could be 83.
Did you hear about
Kingdom Hearts 3 should be at, well, a lot of people hope it'll be at E3. Lawbreakers, the new one from Cliff Bleszinski.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another Square Enix game. Gosh, give someone else a chance, Square. Nier Automata, the new Nier RPG that was unveiled last year. Two more from Microsoft. ReCore, one from Inafune.
And he's working in collaboration with somebody else.
With Prime people.
Probably lots
of people.
Yeah.
But unveiled last year, looks cool, true. But we don't know much about it. And Scalebound.
Oh,
unveiled two E3s ago, got an update last Gamescom.
We just presume we'd see those games because they're in production and not canceled.
They're big first-party games.
Yeah. And also, one of the reasons you talk about a big show for Square Enix, but some of that is that Square just sent us more stuff and be like, we will tell you this is coming.
If you are a game developer or publisher that listens to IGN Games, send Jared Petty your list of games.
Actually, Miranda Sanchez, but Jared can forward that.
Yeah, I can forward it, or I add them sometimes.
Or contact our news tips.
Yep.
Which is easy to find at the bottom of any IGN page.
Yeah.
Or just write us a letter. You can send it to 625
One single drop of blood into a pool of still water and say the magic word three times.
Right.
And just then just...
pick a single rose.
Justin Davis appears like a State Farm agent. Just right there.
Yeah.
Speaking of E3, E3 has announced its own E3 Live event this year that's going to be open to the public. For the first time.
Very exciting for the public, very terrifying for those having to cover the show.
Very spooky.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like a separate area. Like, I don't even think...
I love that people get to come in. I am a populist.
It's just hard to go from place to place for...
difficult sometimes from a purely selfish perspective.
Yeah, but it's not on the show floor, right? So I feel like it's...
Yeah, LA Live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be out there.
But it's very exciting that they're having... public-facing stuff is great. I like when publishers and developers are able to interface more with the community. I think it's always a good thing.
What really surprises me is that it's going to be free. It's a ticketed event, but free.
Oh, mm-hmm. Weird.
Whereas I would think the ESA could make a few bucks off it if they wanted to charge tickets. I mean, every other con, PAX, Gamescom, TGS charges an entry fee.
Maybe that has to do with the exhibitors. Like if EA or whomever is already paying all this money to be there, that they didn't want to put the consumers behind another paywall.
Maybe.
Okay, just let them come in and play.
Maybe.
Games.
Do you guys think this is in response to the changes that are undergoing E3 and certain publishers electing to not participate?
I've been asking a couple of people around here about how all that has come together, and I still don't understand the big picture of that. Do you guys have any insight on why all this is happening?
E3 is an incredibly expensive show for companies like EA and Activision, and they say, why would we spend millions and millions of dollars to have a big booth right next to our biggest rival where we can spend that same money to have our own event, you know, the week before, a week after E3, or whenever, and not have to share the spotlight? And the argument that the ESA has always made is that E3 becomes so big and is such a spectacle that it'll attract the attention of, you know, USA Today, and you know, it's sort of the one time of year that video games will be on, you know, the 10 o'clock evening news on every station around the country. The big video game conference kicked off it, and it's really cute because that's also the text I get from my dad.
What, the big video game conference?
He's like, yeah, they were talking about E3 on the news tonight. I looked in the crowd shots, but I didn't see you. And I'm like, well, Dad, there are 70,000 people there. But
no, that's true. My parents go to like their friends at church are like, my son's at E3 right now.
Yeah, and,
yeah. So.
But I don't know how much that argument really holds water in the internet age, that you really need, you know, one event to sort of shine a spotlight on the video game industry anymore.
Do you predict an E for all future?
Yeah, I think it'll probably become more Gamescom-y public facing long term.
Okay. I hear that's a nightmare.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's great for the public, you know.
But it's so crowded. It might not be great for the public.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think the idea of a public-facing video game show is awesome. Just like, don't make it too crowded, don't make it too loud,
or do what TGS does.
Sound really old right now.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with the crowds and the noise.
No, but it's like it does.
Kids with their big pants.
We are in a very privileged position.
Sucking on pacifiers.
That's a good point.
Super true that like if you let, you know, 100,000 members of the public into a show, it makes it harder for us to do our jobs. Like that's the real talk. But it is good. It's good news for them.
Like, again, you can do what TGS does, and you have press days and public days.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Gamescom does do that. I thought
the developer and publisher pushback on E3 is cyclical. Though this has happened before.
Yep.
All this has happened before, and all this will happen again.
Exactly, just like Battlestar Galactica.
Spoilers.
Are you an angel?
I think you're mixing up your references.
No, Star
no, Galactica. You nailed it. He got Phantom Menace and Battlestar Galactica in that same reference.
I was pretty proud of that.
Two levels.
Yep.
It's working. If you have something to add before we move on?
Wizard!
I thought I did, but it's gone.
Okay. You know, you can't look at my screen in case the Video Game 20 questions answer starts to pop up there. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Randall did.
Okay.
Ooh.
Randall Flagg.
Antoine Randall L.
Randall said...
For those of you not watching, Damon just got an evil smile on his face.
I like the anticipation when you don't know whether it's going to be Big Tony style. Oh,
it was him 2 weeks in a row.
So I think he just changes his name some weeks.
Yeah.
Actually, I think, to be honest, I have not talked to Big Tony style about this, but I think
that's really polite. He's just been providing you conversation topics forever.
I mean, I'm
never, never responded.
I'm saying, I think he's developed a system. I think he knows when to email GameScoop and when it's more likely that I'm going to see his email.
Yeah, 5 minutes before the show?
Yeah, pretty much.
He's watching you at your desk. That's the part
I think so. Anyway, Randall says, there is a feature. He's talking about there's a major feature missing from video game consoles today. Mm-hmm. There's a feature I've wanted out of video game consoles ever since the iPhone 3G came out.
Wow.
And that is...
A reset button on a controller.
A record of the game you have bought and the possibility of playing that game on future devices. I only bring up the iPhone 3G because that is when this concept became a reality. I still have Angry Birds from the year I bought that game and currently can play it on my iPhone 6. Hmm. Nintendo has such a rich collection of games, I would never want to lose access to them. Sure, I could keep a CRT, composite cables, and a Nintendo NES with games. I could also download an emulator, but screw that. I want Nintendo to create this and make it work. I bought Kid Icarus on my Wii. It did not transfer to my Wii U unless I went into the old Wii mode and could play my old stuff. So, the world he wants is, step one, buy a game for a console. Step two, you now have that game for every future console from that manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's great. We're all behind that.
Yeah. Thanks, Randall.
We've approved it.
Seriously. Like, that'd be great. The perfect thing.
Almost, it's like,
I mean,
a million reasons not that that'll never happen, but.
There's a million things that are bad about annualized, like a new phone every year. But one of the good things is, there's much, much more of an expectation that your software carries over with you. You know, when there's 7 years between the PS3 and PS4, I don't know if there's as much expectation that your PS4 will play your old PS3 games, but when I get a new phone, people would lose their minds if their apps just stopped working. And if the apps don't work, it's not Apple's fault, it's the app manufacturer's fault for not, you know, updating their app to the new OS. I completely share, sorry, this is the last thing I'll share is, starting as the mobile games editor at IGN, there's actually not a way to see a total, so I counted by hand one time. I think I have over 2,000 games in my iTunes account. Wow. And that's a significant, I could never switch to Android even if the iOS became crap because I would lose all that library. Like, I'm locked into that ecosystem forever now. Hmm. Same with Steam.
I like the fact that they do that. I do think that things do get left behind, and putting the onus on the game developer. I like that we can have things like this. I like systems like this exist, but some games do end up getting left behind. I mean, you talk about games getting updated. I have games I can't play anymore on my mobile device, for example, because the manufacturer went out of business because they're simply not interested in supporting the game anymore. And so even in a universe where this happens, if we're talking about things by, you know, anachronistic games by companies that are eventually going to be swallowed by other companies who aren't interested in updating the properties that previous company produced, things are still going to get left behind even in that digital reality. Yeah. Mm. There's a lot of problems with making that dream come true. Another one you raised in a great article you wrote last week, you were talking about Wii games and what's going to happen when motion controls just phase out. How are you going to play these games? Some of which are great
games. 10 years or 20 years on whatever platform Nintendo's making games, you'll be able to buy every single Zelda game except Skyward Sword will be probably left behind.
I'm sure someone will figure out how to preserve that game.
I'm not sure of that at all. Like, the motion controls are so deeply baked into the combat. Even if that one is, what about a game like Boom Blocks or Wii Sports?
The problem is sometimes it's even harder to doing it. Someone will figure it out, but doing it legally, I think, is the difficult part. Yeah. Doing it in the place you're not existing in some kind of gray space. Another roadblock I've heard about, I think it was Jeremy Parrish talked about this, some virtual console services, the ESRB charges you when you get a game.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah, okay, why don't you talk about this?
Well, so there's a lot of costs that are involved in just making a game again for work on another system. So you can either offload those to people, eat them at your company, or have the console manufacturer take those on. So the console manufacturer taking those on means that they, in their console, in their software, build emulation software, or sometimes they put hardware in, which is really weird.
Yeah.
Like the PlayStation 3 that played PlayStation 2 games.
Yep.
So they eat that cost in development, and then they have to update that and make sure it works with all the old games forever, right? So that's them eating that. If they don't want to eat that cost, which they don't, I mean, this is like anything. Like, if you can remove, you know, 1 ounce of plastic from your system that you really don't need there, you're going to save that over tens of thousands of, you know, production units. It really adds up. Everything adds up. Anyway, so they can either eat that cost, or you can have the developer of that game keep it playable, right? So you're basically making a remake or a port. When you do that, you have to relicense it for the ESRB. You have to port it. You have to actually make it playable, and you have to develop that cost. So that's even more money. So like, even though you own an old version of that code, it doesn't mean that the developer owes you a new version of that code to play on your new system necessarily. Mm-hmm. We just don't have that kind of a relationship. So there's cost in just bringing it from console to console, and there's no clear path for how it works. Now, that's the point you just made, where app makers, they eat that cost. IGN updates our app all the time. We do it almost monthly with huge updates, partially to keep up with OS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's a cost. That's a tremendous cost for our company. And if you think about it, like, who's going to eat that cost for Kid Icarus?
Then you have things like licensing fees. That's another issue you run into, or licensing agreements. You have things getting delisted, like Ninja Turtles from the Xbox store eventually, mm-hmm. because the license ran out.
You know, Simpsons Arcade game.
Exactly. Now, if you bought it, you own it forever. You've got that. Or at least you own it as long as the service exists.
On the thing you can play it on.
But you can't buy it anymore because that deal hasn't been renegotiated. And then you have things like, I mean, am I ever going to be able to play DuckTales 2 on any, you know, because who's going to go back and negotiate that licensing deal? Who's
so
going to make that happen?
The point is, if you go back to cartridge, everything will be okay.
It's true. I mean, Sam just made such a good point about, there's an expectation among people that I bought this game once, I should be able to continue play it now. Like, I'm owed that. But sort of the missing nuance there that people don't always understand is that it is different software. Like, running on the new console, it's not the same software. Some code had to be rewritten and changed. It is new, it is different, and there is a cost associated with that. So
just think about TVs changing. Yeah. I mean, your TV isn't the same TV you had back in the day. It's a different resolution.
So
you can't just make your old code work on it.
I definitely agree with the sentiment. It doesn't feel good when your stuff doesn't go with you. I absolutely think that developers can and should find a way to do that when they can, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that that's a right or something that people are owed.
I don't think they're owed it. I think it's good for console developers and software developers to celebrate their history. I think it's good for their relationship with their fans.
And I think backwards compatibility, that's the big argument for it, exactly. Is this concern.
Hmm. Yeah. We also always talk about, I mean, we've danced around it all the time on GameScoop lately. It feels weird that it keeps coming up, but just the game preservation. You see services like Good Old Games where their whole pitch is preserving these old games, and they didn't run. Like, just PCs couldn't run old DOS games and stuff like that, and they fix them up and polish them up, and now they can run again. Yep. But the funny thing is, now that Windows, you know, went from 7 to 8 to 9 to 10, some games on Good Old Games are broken.
Yeah, GOG's going to have to rewrite their wrapper again.
Yeah, yeah, so
it's a weird thing.
So Windows 10 like broke a lot of GOG games.
I'm of the opinion that if you can buy it, you should buy it, because somebody went to the trouble to make it for you. And if you can't buy it, just steal it. That's really what I think. And then when it's available, buy it. I think that's a good ethical solution.
Don't put it on YouTube. If you steal it, you get your videos taken down.
Yeah, it's a very different thing.
All right, moving on. Our next email comes from Alex. He says, I just started listening to this podcast a few months ago, and I love it.
That's great.
Video Game 20 Questions is my favorite.
Wow.
Awesome.
Last week, you were all talking about the Tetris movie trilogy. I couldn't agree more with the sentiments about this expressed on your show. However, I have had my own idea of what a Tetris movie should look like. I will now recount Alex's idea for a Tetris movie.
Lay it on us.
My Tetris movie would take place in the early 1990s and revolve around a 10-year-old boy named Dimitri, whose parents had immigrated to the United States from Eastern Europe. He is culturally displaced and torn between the old country of his parents and the customs they want him to hold on to, and the new country of America, the new customs he actually identifies with. Yet he fits into neither. To cap it off, his older brother had joined the U.S. military, and is one of the few killed during Operation Desert Storm. Oh. The only possession of his to make it back is a beat-up Game Boy, scorched from the war with a copy of Tetris plugged into it. It still works. Dimitri becomes obsessed with the game, playing it on his deceased brother's Game Boy as a way to cope with his death and the troubles of growing up between cultures. He falls in love with the falling Tetris pieces and seeing them fit together perfectly, making the holes and gaps fill in. The game itself becomes a metaphor for what is happening on the inside of Dimitri as he struggles with growing as a second-generation immigrant and the loss of his older brother. What are your thoughts on this idea for a Tetris movie? Alex, I think this is good, but I don't think it goes far enough.
Okay.
I think this is the first 20 minutes of the movie. All right? Oh. Let me add my own little bit to it now.
All right.
He's got his brother's scorched, you know, partly melted down Game Boy, and the Tetris cartridge is like melted in there. He's never taken it out.
Like that real Game Boy. Okay.
And one day he's playing it, and he gets a ridiculously high score. And then the screen flashes, and it says score recorded, organization notified. And then the Game Boy shuts off, and then the power in his whole neighborhood goes out.
Oh shit!
Oh man!
So he stumbles outside. He's like, "What's going on?" The power company rolls up in a van. Is like, "Everybody, please stay calm. We'll get this all sorted out really quickly." And in the darkness, someone puts a bag over his head and throws him in the back of the power company's van and drives off.
Okay, this is like about this.
Right now, it's like an American Tale meets Last Starfighter.
They take him somewhere. He has no idea who has taken him.
It's a really different movie than
where he's going. And he's like, his mind is racing. How can I get these guys? Like, let me go. And he's like, my brother is a Marine, and if he finds out you guys have taken me, you guys would be in trouble. And one of the people in the van just says, "Your brother was the finest soldier I ever knew." So they keep driving, and he figures out they're like driving underground somewhere, and they finally stop. They take him out, and they take the bag off his head, and he was in front of this like giant door that's sort of interlocked with pieces. And after a moment, the pieces come apart,
yeah.
And they reveal this gigantic underground facility where there's all these like scientists working, and they're working on these gadgets, and there's soldiers training. And then one of the guys.
I love that you have somehow transformed his heartwarming like family tale.
He's like, "What is this?" And he's like, "Welcome to the Tetris Initiative. We're a dark organization working behind the scenes to make all of the blocks of the world fall into place. Your training begins now." Tetris.
Okay, I got it continued from there.
Okay.
All right, and then it goes. It makes that sound. And then, and then
that's the sound.
Cut to a nice, like, cartoony suburban household.
Okay.
Okay. And in bed, a little elf-shaped block wakes up, and he says, "That was a really weird dream."
It's pretty good.
That's Twilight Zone episode. It's like the Star Tropics 2 ending, where you find out the people you're rescuing are Tetris blocks.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Yep, that's totally how that game ends.
No way.
No one beat that game.
Yep, totally.
But if we make this, no. Alex,
and then the credits roll, and all the Nintendo characters play instruments.
Yeah. Yeah, like Donkey Kong on like the stand-up bass.
Yeah,
but I like his original pitch. I think it's
you don't like mine.
Okay. No, I like yours very much. Yeah. I like his I like his kind of American Tale pitch there. That's a neat idea for like a human what video games mean to us movie. I like that. Mm-hmm.
Conclude this, I interviewed the creator of Tetris, Alexey Pajitnov,
mm-hmm.
and know the story of Tetris and what Tetris means and what it actually is all about. And I still have that interview on a hard drive, and I need to make a story about it.
The story of Tetris.
Are you going to tell it?
No.
No? Oh, that's such a great story.
One day he'll tell the tale.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, Damon, what inspired the giant like interlocking doors and the bowl?
The Tetris box.
Like Tetris.
What inspired it?
No, like where did? How did you?
Out of all the things he talked about.
I like the door.
I mean, it's got to be a big. It's got to be a big impressive.
It's
door.
A Tetris door.
Tetris.
Right. Tetris.
Tetris inspired.
I don't remember.
You think
the
it should just be like a
Tetris inspired?
No,
everything
I'm just asking.
A regular revolving door.
No, this was not criticism. This was a question. I just wondered, like, what
the answer is just so obvious.
Okay, now it's time for Video Game 20 Questions. My friends here have 20 yes or no questions to guess this week's mystery game that was suggested by Rob from Australia.
Don't screw us, Rob.
They call him, Aussie Rob.
Remember,
it's a croc.
The NES wasn't really big there. They got the PAL version. It was around, but not popular.
They did have that, but oof.
They had arcades.
I want to point out that I got so many more tweets about video games that.
About where characters don't hold anything in their hands.
Yeah.
Last week, we were trying to come up with video
what happens
where a human doesn't hold anything in their hands.
You play as a human, and then I asked, "Do you hold anything in your hands?" And they all thought that was the dumbest question. And then Damon's like, "Name one video game where you don't hold anything in your hands." And I was like, "Oh."
He couldn't come up with
I guess that's true. But then
people suggested The Witness.
Yeah. Yes. Super Mario Witness. Brothers.
No, you hold
a fire
stuff.
Flower.
Like, Mario 1, you don't hold anything.
You hold a fire flower.
You don't hold a fire. He's not holding a flower.
I think in the cartoons he's holding.
Well, yeah, in the cartoons he's holding. Well, he touches it sometimes.
Does your character wear? Do you wear a hat?
Totally unclear.
Does that count as a?
Totally unclear. Was this game released after January 1st, 2000?
No.
Same question, 1990.
Yes.
So it is in the
90s game.
Was this
sounds
game...
like Clax.
It is the future.
and there's time for Klax.
Did this game appear on a Nintendo platform?
I believe that.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that one. We were over here talking about
Klax. I asked if it appeared on a Nintendo platform.
It's a Nintendo platform?
So it could be SimCity.
Okay. Do you... is your avatar on screen in this game?
It would be clear if you wore a hat or not, Jared.
Not necessarily. Yes, it could be like in the cockpit of an airplane or something.
Five questions.
Oh, it's been a long time. I forgot all my good questions.
We need to narrow down platform, and we need to narrow down if it was an exclusive or not. We know it appeared on Nintendo
is
platforms.
This a Nintendo?
Oh, we already asked that.
No, exclusive? Not if it was an exclusive.
Oh, we didn't ask that.
All right, well, he already shook his head, so I'm not going to ask it.
No, come on. Come on. I want to stay above board. I want our victory to be legit.
I didn't make that mistake. is it a Nintendo exclusive?
No.
Nice of you.
Okay, so. Did this game appear, was this like a 32/64-bit era game?
No.
Okay, so probably 16-bit the era. 16-bit, or it could be a late NES game.
Well, yeah, but that's unlikely. But
unlikely.
Is this that's tough.
So, so a Genesis SNES game.
Right, from that
could be SimCity.
Not an exclusive. Could be SimCity. Could be Tetris. Could be a Game Boy game.
Yeah, it could be puzzle. It could be strategy.
Yeah, game, Tetris was 89, though. Could be. Is it a puzzle game?
Yes.
Okay.
That's great, actually.
Yeah,
I'm thrown for a loop that we're incredibly narrows good it progress. Down.
It can't be Tetris Attack, because that's not
could
on.
Could still be Klax, because it was the 90s. But why would he have the
look? I don't think that's on Super Nintendo.
I don't know.
I'm trying to think about multi-platform puzzle games. Oddly enough, I'm thinking about Columns, and a lot of those were exclusive to one platform.
Yeah, that wasn't on Super Nintendo.
No.
Tetris Dr. Mario was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even those are exclusive. Multi-platform puzzle games is just throwing me for a loop now.
But puzzle is a little bit confusing, too. I mean, Bust a Move.
Well, we just said it wasn't a Nintendo exclusive. Columns was a Sega exclusive.
We know it appeared on a Nintendo platform.
Super Nintendo. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Does it involve manipulating blocks? Are you flipping around blocks?
No.
Does it involve manipulating, blobs? Squishy things?
No.
Okay, just...
That's 10 questions.
Sorry.
All right.
I thought I knew what it was for a second. Maybe a bit of a reach.
Is it a spin-off game from a bigger series?
The game that we're talking about?
Yeah.
No.
So it's not Puzzle Fighter or anything like that?
But there are spin-offs for it, is what I got from them.
Yeah. We're reading between the lines a lot here. Should I ask sequels?
Sure.
Yeah, but I don't know that even helps me. I don't have a vision in my head. You don't manipulate blocks. What does that leave in terms of puzzle?
Well, that's why I was trying to eliminate Yoshi's and Yoshi's Cookie and Wario's Woods from that last question. Those are the big puzzle games besides Tetris and Dr. Mario.
So it's not a spin-off. So it's not any of the Yoshi's Cookies or Wario's Woods or any of that garbage, and it's not any of the traditional blocks.
It could still be Bust a Move.
Does puzzle mean is point-and-click adventure a puzzle?
What is it? If the game were a point-and-click adventure game, I would not have said it is a puzzle game.
Puzzle game, yeah.
Interesting. I'm just trying to think, give me an example of a puzzle game that doesn't manipulate blocks.
Bust a Move.
Bust a Move, Puyo Puyo, Hattress, let's see, there's a few others. And that we're just thinking in terms of that kind of,
And it's unclear whether you have a hat, so you're not...
It's not Hattress.
It's not Bust a Move, because you're the little dinosaurs in that game.
Yeah, you don't have a hat.
You see your avatar on screen in that game, yeah. So it can't be that.
Did this game get sequels?
Yes.
Oh, that's helpful.
They still making sequels?
What's that?
They still making sequels?
I wonder. I could ask that. That's a good question. You want to ask if they're still making sequels? Still making sequels?
No.
Is it a Japanese developed game?
No.
Ooh.
Shoot.
That's interesting.
Was EA making puzzle games in the 90s? Multi-platform thing's really throwing me for a loop.
Do you think we're going to get this one to him?
That doesn't count as a question.
Yeah, I know. You got six questions left.
16-bit era puzzle game.
You guys are kind of on the wrong track.
I'm wondering. kind of going the wrong way here. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about I wouldn't call Lost Vikings a puzzle game, but when I'm picturing puzzle, I'm worried I'm not picturing the right kind of puzzle game.
Well, I think Lost Vikings, we would have gotten at least a contingency.
But you know what I mean, as an example.
What about Lemmings?
Lemmings or something along those lines.
Right, but you see your avatar. Well, no, you're blowing shit up. So,
but even puzzle's very broad, and I feel like I'm honed in on the wrong kind of puzzle.
Or we didn't do consoles, so it could be Mario versus Donkey Kong or Donkey Kong 94?
It could be that. That's kind kind of a puzzle game, but like those a Lode Runner style puzzle
those
game.
Those aren't exclusives we'll on Nintendo.
I would call Donkey Kong 94 a platformer.
Yeah, it's like Lode Runner, kind of like a puzzle platformer.
But we know you don't manipulate blocks, which I know you don't in Lemmings either.
Well, Lemmings was on the Super Nintendo. I mean, so that would totally, and it's multi-platform.
What's going on, Damon?
I think it's Lemmings.
Is this a game where you...
We need to implement... I didn't think we need to stop. We need to put up a wall here. Otherwise, Justin could just stare at me and get me to react.
Can you accidentally or intentionally kill a bunch of little lemmings in this game?
Yes.
Could this game be lemmings?
Yeah.
Actually, that.
We were getting there anyway, before.
Well, you guys got hung up on Nintendo. It came to Nintendo, but that wasn't really what.
I played that so much on my Super Nintendo, though.
I was trying to think of multi-platform puzzle games.
That was DMA, right? The guys that went on to
developed by DMA Cygnosis. Design.
Yeah, went on to
published by Cygnosis.
Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
Originally published on the Amiga in 1991, and then just came to everything.
Have you ever watched
Lemmings 3D? Was on 3DO.
Have you ever watched that Game Center CX where Arno plays all of Super Nintendo Lemmings in one sitting?
No.
Oh man, it's beautiful.
Isn't that like 8 hours? Of I don't game?
Think. Yeah, they edit it. Game Center CX isn't like a boring live play. They edit it
I
down.
I do need a better. You can't just. That needs to be a rule. You're not allowed to just try and look at me and make me laugh.
No, but you had. When I said, "Is it Lemmings?" I was looking at you, but secretly looking at Damon.
I was trying
and
not
he
to.
He didn't react at all. Damon nailed it. I think he did a good job.
Justin got me to. Got me the crack.
I spent a lot of time playing Lemmings. That was a fun game.
Man, who hasn't?
Yeah. It's a real good game. It's great.
Where they plug their ears and explode.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Lemmings really. I'm sad that they're not still making.
A DS one would be really interesting, right?
Yes, would be good. It would be great on iOS, on mobile, and they have not made a new Lemmings game, to my knowledge.
That's a good point.
So I think Sony owns the license to that currently.
Why? Hmm. Whoa.
The last one was on Vita, I think.
There was a Vita one?
What's another small, adorable animal that like marches ever onward toward its death that we could make one about?
Well, there is a Mario, March of the Minis, Mario series.
Yeah, it's March of the Minis.
Nearly as neat as that.
There's that, we were talking about this the other day, there's a Simpsons one that was kind of like that, right?
Yeah, Krusty's Funhouse.
Yeah.
Before we go this week, as an example of the hard-hitting investigative journalism I do on my Twitter account, I posted this poll earlier today. Would you, if someone told you have to either pay $5,000 or give up pizza for life, what would you do?
I'd give up pizza.
Pay $5,000 to eat pizza for the rest of my life. Are you kidding me? Okay.
You still have to, you don't get free pizza. Actually.
You're not getting any free pizza.
I'm fine with that.
You're paying $5,000 for the ability to keep eating pizza.
Yeah, I'll pay that fine.
No, I give up.
No
pizza.
Question.
Economics are important right now, so I'm going to have to go with no pizza.
But I don't even eat, like, I like pizza. I love pizza. But, like, I've eaten pizza once this month. Like, I don't care about pizza that much.
Today?
Yeah. Yeah, today.
I had pizza at least 3 times this week, and it's only Wednesday.
Yeah, I really adore pizza, but $5,000 is a lot of money.
I know people love pizza. That's why I wanted to know. Would they be willing to pay a high tax, a pizza tax?
You have to amortize, like, how many times are you going to eat pizza in your life after this, and then divide, like, okay, if I eat it once a month.
It's going to be $1 a slice for the rest of your life.
That's a lot.
I probably eat pizza once a week, and that explains a lot. I mean, that's kind of...
Well, pizza is the greatest thing that's ever happened.
It's really good.
On Earth.
A slight majority is electing to pay the ransom at the moment. 57% said they will pay $5,000.
I ran a similar experiment where I asked people if they thought ghosts were real.
Yeah?
Such a shockingly high percentage of people said yes.
Mm-hmm. I told you.
Yeah.
People believe.
That's a thing.
A lot of things.
I lived
you should
in a
not be surprised.
One third of people believed ghosts were real.
Okay, two things.
One third of people
are
two things. First, I lived in a haunted house, so I totally believe in ghosts. Second, you said you saw the Mothman. So who are you kidding?
He's not a ghost.
But he recanted.
Mothman's real.
I didn't recant.
He didn't recant. He was just talking about the Mothman again the other day.
I don't know about that.
People bring the Mothman up to me way more often than I bring it up.
I have no problem with the Mothman.
When you bring something like
that up. Did you make the pizza call?
What do you mean?
What would you do?
Oh, yeah. Good question.
I would not pay $5,000, but if you switched out cheeseburgers for pizza, I would. I'd pay the pizza tax, or the cheeseburger tax.
Really?
Is there anything in life better than a perfect cheeseburger?
Yeah, a piece of pizza.
I'm more of a cheeseburger guy. Myself.
That's because you've had shitty pizza your whole life.
It's kind of great that these are both foods that, like, people in the 90s brawler would pick up off the ground and eat to get their health back.
Yum.
Yeah.
For sure.
A big roast turkey?
Yeah, for some reason. That'd be a poked pork chop in a wall. Sorry, Dan.
Ran a recent poll asking people if they thought dinosaurs would have tasted good. The majority said, yeah, they probably would have tasted
good. That's a tough call.
And birds taste good. Dinosaurs,
do
you think they're
kind of birds? Right? So does alligator.
Yeah.
Which is basically a dinosaur.
But don't you have to flavor it a lot?
No, alligator, it's actually got a lot of natural oil, so it comes out tasting really strong on its own.
People don't eat ostriches. They're big birds.
Yeah, that's true. Also, the ostrich burger I had one time was kind of dry, but
yeah, I don't know.
Tell you what's good, horse.
I don't know. Chevelle, is that what they call it?
I had it in Japan. I don't remember what is the word for horse. I forgot. Well, anyways, we're good.
Do you have horse like sushi?
I had horse.
What?
I know that they serve that.
I had horse sushi
what?
And I had a cooked buff. Yeah, I had horse sushi and it was really, really good. They also make horse ice cream. Right, I never had that.
I kind of want to end the show. I'm just
sorry.
But like horse was good enough that I would eat it on its own. Like if I had the choice, I would eat horse. It's that good.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, would you pay a $5,000 tax on video games?
Yes,
I'd pay $5,000 if I had to keep playing video games.
What about pizza?
All right, that's all the scoops we have for this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Sam. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out. Powerful. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful robot, evil. Super powerful. Evil robot.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.